Greetings, salutations, and welcome to the Plains Talkers Podcast. I am your host, Will Benson, joined as always by the awesomely, mythically, invitationally, Aramis Perez. Mr. Perez, how are you tonight, sir?
Wait a minute. I didn't get an invitation. What are you talking about?
Well, yeah. Well, you were invited to the show.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, it must have gotten lost in the mail, because...
It always does. That's just the way it works. But here, you know what? We don't have a ton of time, so... All right, we're right in on a hat tap up, keep and draw. Believe me, folks, first of all, let me just tell you right now, our foot's going to be on the gas most of the show. And by gas, I don't mean what I had for Taco Bell. Like, we are just going to hit the accelerator and keep going. This is an aggro episode because holy cats, was there a lot to go over. We had a Mythic Invitational this week. We had the reveal of War of the Spark this week. We had that's enough, really. I mean, there was even some... what do you call it? Like some controversy that we may even talk about. Who knows? We have time. It's the very last thing because we're going to keep this like good and positive. But Aramis, how are you? How's things? How's your stuff?
Stuff is good. Yeah, we have a lot to go over. So I think we just need to skip all this crap and go right.
Well,
into
I mean,
Maine.
You know, just so you know, we are playing Friday night in Kerwin.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, yeah.
I mean,
there's
and you're
that
playing
thing.
And you're playing what now?
Esper Control, probably.
God damn it. I'm torn between playing Mono Red and Gruul. Okay, well, we talked about it. All right, moving on. So let's, yeah.
Main phase.
Wow, that just sounded awful. Okay, main phase. Welcome to main phase. Holy cats, we had our first Mythic Invitational. Mm. And you know what? All right, I mean, we've been pretty not, I won't say rude to Wizards, but... We've been pretty hard on Wizards over the past couple of weeks as far as taking GP coverage and where the hell's the money gone.
That is
and
true.
What the heck is going on.
That is true.
And so, you know, I will say this. This show this week, they stepped it up. They did show up. I'm game for that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, not that I think it's worth the money they took. I still think we need GPs, but that's beside the point. What did you think?
I thought that... other than a few glaring hiccups that we'll
there
get
were
to.
A few.
Yeah, there were a couple of hiccups. I didn't get to watch a whole bunch of it. I got to watch a little bit on really mostly Sunday was what I was able to watch. I was able to sort of check in a little bit on Saturday after coverage was over and Friday night after coverage was over. Other than, like I said, a couple of glaring hiccups, they hit a home run.
They really did.
This was... By far their most popular event on Twitch, they actually got to 170,000 viewers on Twitch.
Yes,
which made them.
Is that just during the? Was that during the panel though?
No, that was during the main. That was during the main event. That was during the top four. And it actually got to the point where they were the number three streaming program on Twitch behind like Fortnite and League of Legends.
No shit.
Yeah.
Wow. Or no kidding. Wow.
Yeah, they were. This was by far their most popular event that they've ever done. The event itself was awesome. We'll get to that in a little bit. My big thing for me was the thing that I was looking the most forward to. I mean, the event was awesome. I was looking forward to the War of the Spark panel at 10:30.
We all were.
So I'm gonna get the negative out of the way.
Okay.
They screwed the pooch at the beginning of this one.
Boy, did they.
So,
did not having sound?
Not even that. They got stuck in a Nexus of Fate loop for about 10-15 minutes. They started about 20 minutes late. When they started, there was, like you said, there was no sound for probably the first 10 minutes. And the most unfortunate thing was during that 10 minutes was the Twitch reveal of the War of the Spark trailer.
Right.
So, yeah. So I ended up having to watch that on YouTube a little while afterwards. And... I'm not going to lie. It hit me in the feels.
Aww.
It did. It hit me in the
Aww.
Feels. The song they picked, the emotion
well,
that
yeah.
was conveyed, that was fantastic. I wish the sound had worked when it was live.
Yes. Well, it was still good. I saw it. They did play it a second time with it live.
Yes.
And at the end of the panel. And it was. It was definitely something. And seeing, it wasn't Jace. What the hell was his name? Zach?
Oh, Dak Faden.
Dak, yeah. Dak going down and wow. It was the trailer was amazing. It's kinda telling us everything we need to know. I'm really digging And I don't want to get ahead of ourselves with regards to previews here, but I'm really, really digging the fact that they're kind of revealing these spoilers in order. And they've actually come out and said it. They're like, we're telling the story and how we're even revealing the spoilers.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, okay, this is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. Overall, I mean, the set looks incredible. But, I mean, let's pivot back to the Mythic Invitational real quick.
Yes.
Yeah, you're not wrong about there were a few hiccups. Every once in a while, the stream here cut out. Mm-hmm. I watched a lot Saturday out in the background. I mean, I would watch a little bit and see some decks. Saw a lot of Savich, which, you know, he's just hell of a player. I had no idea he was that good. Mm-hmm. And his deck wasn't playing the Esper control.
He was playing
the Esper,
the Dovin's Acuity, I think.
Yeah. The Esper's Acuity, he called it.
Yeah. I think that's what he was playing.
And that's an interesting deck. Which is smart because, I mean, we'll go over this too a little bit. I mean, we could talk about the duo standard in regards to that, but I mean, him kind of changing it up a little bit, you know, and playing Acuity as opposed to just flat out control when, I mean, holy crap, 56% or something like that of decks was control, Esper. Mm-hmm. Like, it was some stupid number.
Well, I mean, Esper is really good game one.
In best of one.
And
yeah.
Game one, period. Esper is amazing.
Yes. And, you know, and then the other ones were mono white and mono red. And, I mean, I saw a lot of mono white and mono red. And that's, we'll get into that too with the duo standard. I think that's the problem with duo standard is that it doesn't lend you a whole lot of diversity as far as deck selection. It seems like they all kind of cracked the code pretty early in development of what they were going to play. And so when they did it, it's a whole lot of mono white, a whole lot of mono red, no mono blue almost anywhere. I don't think anybody was playing it. Mono and Esper control. Some Gruul aggro, some Gruul midrange, but no Sultai midrange almost at all.
No, midrange gets crushed in this format because Sultai midrange is a game 2-3 deck. Game one, it has kind of a 50-50-ish matchup against other things. It gets really good after sideboarding, which is not an option here.
Right.
So it's just not a good choice to want to roll the dice with half of your deck. You want something that's going to have a really good game one matchup, and that's either going to be suffocating control or blast your face off as soon as possible aggro.
And I think that's the problem with duo standard. I do. I think they have to go back to the drawing board on this. I think I don't know why they're fixing what isn't broken. Mm. Best of three is a great way to kind of decide Magic. Mm. It always has been. Sideboarding and all of that, it's been a great tool to decide professional Magic games. Mm. In this best of one format, and again, this goes back to like Arena and where they're going with it. Okay, when it was going towards mobile and other, you know, going towards Xbox and PlayStation, I could get behind the best of one.
Right.
Okay, I didn't like it. I could get behind it, though. I can understand it. Again, I think we talked about this in one of our first episodes. I mean, you know, I want to be able to play Magic while sitting on the toilet, and so I can't play best of three while pooping, because if I do, I'm going to get hemorrhoids. But you know, you're welcome.
I'm not even gonna know. Keep going.
But at the end of the day, you know, if they're moving away from putting Arena on mobile, which it sounds like they are, then there is absolutely no reason for them not to right the ship and say, hey, we're gonna move back towards the best of three. We want to give you the closest, you know, Magic feel you can have. That will fix the freaking deck shuffler like fixer thing that has been killing everybody. Like, and you know what? I saw it happen even in this event. Their stupid little best of one deck shuffler fixer thing sucks.
Well,
I lost you a little bit. Come go back and do that again.
I'm good. I'm back.
Okay, I got your audio again. So you were saying?
Well, what I was saying is I want to go back to the gameplay itself. There's one thing in particular I want to go over. It happened, I don't remember if it was Saturday night or Sunday, what I think is the best play in the tournament.
Right. I know where you're going with this.
there was a lot of high-level play, even with the limited, you know, number of decks available in the format. there was a matchup between Matt Nass and Seth Manfield that was insane. It was a Esper control mirror, and Seth Manfield was just destroying Matt Nass. He had Teferi out. He had
him ultimated.
He had the emblem. He had two other Teferis in his hand, and he had gotten to the point where his deck was basically mono Teferi. And he was just looping the emblem, looping the Teferis, drawing cards, and exiling Matt Nass's lands, all of his blue lands.
Okay, hold on. You broke up again.
All right.
Just repeat that. I heard looping. So take it back to looping.
Well, he was looping the draw steps so he could always have Teferi in his hand. And only Teferi's left in his deck, so he was exiling all of Matt Nass's lands, and especially after all of his blue sources. So it got to the point where he had no blue sources left, and he only had a few cards left in his library. Maybe like Matt Helly had like 9 cards left in his library. Seth Manfield, his entire deck was 2 Teferis, and he just kept looping them.
Right, I remember that. I actually watched that.
Yep, I saw that one too. So what ended up happening was that the sideboard tech for best of one for Esper Control, since there's no sideboards, a lot of them were playing Mastermind's Acquisition, which allowed you to really have a sideboard. Matt Nass...
Mastermind's Inquisition.
Yeah, Mastermind's Acquisition. So Matt Nass drew his Acquisition. He is holding an island just for the off chance that he drew the Acquisition. He played the Acquisition, played the island. He had searched up Unmoored Ego.
And got rid of Teffy.
And here's the catch. When he cast the spell, he had Seth Manfield had a Teferi in play, one Teferi in his hand. His deck was one Teferi. So he named Teferi as the card for Unmoored Ego. And what Unmoored Ego does is that if it exiles any copies of the card you named out of their hand, you draw a card for each card that was removed from their hand. And because
it's not a May. It's not a May.
Yeah, you have
it's
to.
You have to.
So he exiled all the Teferis in his deck, in his hand, and had to draw a card, but his library was empty and he immediately lost the game. That was insane. The guy, Matt Nass, had lost this game. It was over. He only had 9 cards left in his deck. It was done.
It was done. He was over.
He was locked up, and then all of a sudden, oops, I win.
That's just, I was watching that too. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe it. It was incredibly, you know, and that's just it. There was things like that all over the place. And it was really, really a good event.
Mm-hmm. And props to Andrea Mengucci to winning the whole thing from Italy.
Yes.
$250,000. Good for you, pal.
Yeah. I salute. Huh? This Sam's for you. But it just... Yeah, it was a good event, and it was fun to watch. It got a little played. It's like, oh, look, Esper versus aggro. Oh, look, your aggro versus their Esper. Now it's Esper.
And something they could have done, too, is what they did, and I found this kind of disappointing, was that they played the one match on camera, and then they sort of did like a fast forward of maybe one other match, and then there was like this 20-minute gap before the next match started. I feel like you could have played all the matches sort of back-to-back like Time Walk Magic and not really lost anything.
They should have done that. I don't know that they had the ability to – I don't know what they were doing. Who knows? Like, you know, because they're not sitting at their own thing, too, they're part of PAX East, maybe they didn't have, you know, the infrastructure to record or whatever to be able to throw that up.
Maybe.
You know, I don't know. It's any number of things.
But you know what? I will say this, though. For their first time doing it like this, I think they did a fantastic job.
Well, I loved the ring announcer, like, bringing in the players for the prime match.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, you know. I mean, here's the thing. The problems I think I had is that, first of all, because it's a 3-day tournament and dual elimination, you know, did we get kicked off? What happened here?
No, you froze for a second. We're having some issues with our connection, I think.
Yeah, I know, and I'm not sure if it's me or you. Hold on a second. I'm going to put that back.
No, I'm hardwired in.
I know. Yeah, it doesn't matter. We're both hardwired in. Yeah. Okay, now we're back to that. Okay. What was I saying, though? The introductions were kind of cool and things is that I forget where I was going with that. So, dual standard.
Well, you're talking about the player introductions.
Yeah, I was talking about player introductions, but I was going somewhere with it.
Well, I'll say this while you think about it. You could sort of tell that some of the players were like, I got to go out on stage and do this. I don't want to.
Oh, that's what I was talking. Okay, but go on, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were like that. And then my issue was a three-day tournament, and you guys are like, and you publicize the deck lists after day one because you had to. Mm. It's like there was no, and without sideboard, man, you just, it took some of the mystery away. Like, you know, I get the feeling that they could really go, like, go back to their room. And since it's a bracket tournament, like, you know, Final Four type of thing, you know who you're playing tomorrow. It's like, oh, I'm going to get his deck list. I know he's got three on Mort Ego in the sideboard with the, you know, Mastermind's Inquisition. So I need to make sure that I have this here and stored here and this, that. And it changed up kind of, and I'm not sure how I feel about it. On one hand, I like it because it kind of, you know, the whole sideboard, not being able to sideboard thing, you know, giving them any advantage they can have to kind of take this to a next level, I'm okay with. Mm-hmm. But on the other side, it's like, again, I'm kind of a purist.
Yeah.
And I like that, you know, they sit down across from the table, and unless they've gone to top eight, you know, they don't know really what the deck they're playing against is unless they've talked to somebody who happened to play this guy or was sitting next to him.
Well, something to keep in mind, too, is that with a lot of the pros especially, all you need to do is play your first or second land, and they know down to maybe four or five cards what you're playing.
Right.
So at that point, they can say, okay, well, they've already cast two of this card this game, so at most they have one or two more.
But a few of these guys plan on that, and they mess with their decks and tweak things.
Yeah.
They'll throw, you know, that's how you get a Direfleet Daredevil sometimes in on a mono-red aggro. Mm. You know, it's just like, they're like, I'm going to throw this in just to kind of, you know, make them wonder.
Well, let me ask you a question. What do you think of What do you think of the fact that it was double elimination?
That's another problem I have with the duo standard.
Really?
Is that, I like double elimination in one hand. And I think with this being the test run, you have to do it. I think you have, because so much can go wrong. The deck shuffler alone with the stupid, you know, hand fixing, you know, giving you a double elimination kind of mitigates some of the schputz that, and this is what also gets me, this software is still in goodness gosh darn beta. You know, it's like you just had $1 million tournament with beta freaking software.
Which, like, Well, it's probably like one of those perpetual beta things where it's always going to quote unquote be in beta. I don't know. It's just, it doesn't seem to me like something that they're really going to be pushing too hard to have the actual release.
Yeah. Well, I think they promised a few things with the actual release, like mobile.
Well, yeah, about that.
You know, and until they come out officially and say, we are not doing mobile, we've changed our minds, okay, it's out of beta. You know, it's things like that. The dual elimination was okay. It just, I don't know, I would like to have seen, I think I'd rather see them try one time, go for a more traditional tournament where you can sideboard, where you can do something different, you know, that sort of thing. You know, I would like to see that because I think sideboarding is, and I understand too that this was an invitational, meaning they had some, you know, streamers there and people that may not sideboard very often. Like, these guys play mono one because they're coming from Hearthstone, which doesn't play best of three.
Well, I think Savik was purely a streamer.
Yes, he was.
He's been playing for a long time.
Holy cow, he was good, yeah.
I think he's been playing since 1999, actually. But
yeah, that's what he said.
So he has an idea of how to do best of three if it comes to that, but that wasn't his game plan.
No, and I mean, that's just, I mean, think about the breadth of decks we could have gotten had they done a best of three. All right, it opens up mid-range. I think Mono Blue would have made a showing, which, you know, Elliot just put it in here, you know, that they did not like the Mono Blue flying decks they were playing against at Friday Night Magic.
Well, there was only one Mono Blue at the Invitational.
Yeah.
He made the finals, but...
Yeah, it just... Nobody was playing it, really. And even Autumn wasn't playing it, which I found surprising. Mm. It was... You know, you could have seen a lot more decks than the aggro. Like I said, it was aggro and control, and almost everybody had one of each.
Yeah.
You know, some people there were a few, like I said, the Gruul mid-range aggro deck was in there for a little bit, and, well, I think it was MTG Goldfish. They had, like, the breakdown here.
Yeah, mid-range is a bad choice. I mean, just because the pros especially, you look at the percentages, and mid-range has
the poorest
percentage for game one. You know, mid-range decks are better after sideboarding, and that's not an option. And with the...
You are totally breaking up on me.
With the Esper decks, what you end up getting is the biggest adjustment that they made was adding the Masterminds Acquisition, because you can't normally have a sideboard. Masterminds Acquisition allows you to have a toolbox. It basically turns into 15 cards.
Right.
So that's what I think what really pushed Esper Control over the top was being able to say, all right, I'm playing this matchup. I need this card. Let me get it.
Right. Right. Esper Control, they had 36 decks of Esper.
Yeah.
27 mono white aggro, 17 mono red, 9 acuity, 6 Gruul Warriors, 6 Temur Reclamation, then 5 green aggro, and then you had 4 explore decks, Golgari, 2 spectacle decks, or 4 spectacle, 3 tokens, and then 2 Jund.
Yeah, and the 1 lone mono blue.
Yeah, they didn't even put it in here.
Yeah.
You know, it's... Yeah, so Esper Control was in 56.3% of players who had that. Mm-hmm. Mono White had 41.2 of the players, 26.6, and then it goes down to 14 and lower below that. And again, Esper Acuity actually should be considered mono aggro. It just had one different card, really. So you could pull that up to over 40 out of, well, let me see, there were 64, so there was 128
decks.
128 decks, and one third of them was an Esper something.
Mm-hmm. In a best of one, Esper is your, it's either Esper or mono red or mono white. If you lump those two together,
yeah,
those are your options, because it's just, like I said, it's either suffocating control or super fast aggro, because you're either going to get steamrolled or you're going to get bored out of your mind if you're on the wrong end of it. Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened. I'd like to see them do another. I mean, I know they're doing another one soon. And I'd love to see them do best of three.
I think
a Mythic Championship is going to be a best of three.
Yeah, the next time they do this for Arena, it's going to be a Mythic Championship. So it will almost definitely be best of three.
Right. I think they're going to take Duo Standard back to the drawing board, because I don't think they were, again, I don't think they were terribly happy with it. Like, again, because the decks were so the same. You know, it's how you pilot it. It's, you know, and you got to watch certain people pilot things. I mean, Reed Duke getting rolled was kind of fun for me to watch. But, you know, on that regard, Matt Nass and Seth Manfield was the play of that tournament. Don't get me wrong. The finals was really good. The top four were really, really good.
There weren't a whole lot of mistakes made during that tournament at all.
No.
I think there was a lot of very high level play. You could tell the bright lights got to a couple people, every now and then, but that's going to happen. Even if it was paper magic, it was going to happen. So I think everybody played really well. I think, you know, they have some tweaks to do with coverage. They have maybe some tweaks to do with the format itself. Overall, I think,
a little time walk would be good.
Yeah, a little more.
They should keep a little time.
More time walk would be great. Just, you know, because you're there to see magic, and I mean, the breakdown of the matchups and the analysis is all great. It's all well and good, but that shouldn't be, you know, 3/4 of the coverage. It should be mostly magic being played.
Right. And I think the speediness of the format being, okay, I don't have to shuffle between plays that tell me to shuffle my deck.
Right.
The gameplay is faster. I mean, even with Esper Control against Esper Control, which should go to time almost every time, mm-hmm. Didn't really. I think it happened once. They started to get down to turns, and yet he still pulled it out.
Yeah.
Like, they were still able to finish. Like, I don't know of anyone that went to a draw. But let's pivot from that. All right, so that's Friday and Saturday was great. Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Wait a second. This was a 4-day tournament.
Yes, it was.
It's freaking insane.
Yeah.
How do you do that without splitting it into, like, more of a draft or sealed type of match? Limited.
They pulled it off. They really. I think part of it was because of the fact that it was only a field of 64,
and it was a double elimination.
Yeah, and double elimination.
In essence, 128.
That stretched it out.
Yeah.
But it also gave people a fair, you know, a good shot at winning. You know, you don't lose and you're basically screwed. You can, you know, as long as you keep winning, you can afford to take a loss.
And getting into, it got more people on camera.
Yeah.
So, which is really what it was. I mean, especially if Wizards is going to make you fly yourself out there, like the least they can do is put you on camera. Yep. So, I mean, let's pivot from that. Saturday morning, 10:30 a.m., everybody was up. Everybody turned it on. The War of the Spark preview occurred.
Mm-hmm.
So, and yes, okay, there were hiccups during the broadcast, but we got 17 cards. And then something strange happened. They didn't stop.
No, they kept going.
They've kept going. As of right now, MTG Salvation has 71 cards that have been revealed. So we can reveal a few of them here and talk about it. But, you know, I mean, there are some big ones, obviously. There is a Nicol Bolas. They've already – I can't believe they already put him out there, actually.
That was kind of a leak. They weren't planning on putting him out there as soon as it was. That was a leak. There was a bunch of spoilers that came out during coverage. There were some spoilers that started to trickle out from websites and stuff like that. At some point on Sunday afternoon, someone posted a picture of 16 cards that looks like they might have been on Magic Online that someone was able to find before they got pulled down. And it was 14 Planeswalkers and two Mythic Rares, creatures from the set. And some people were thinking, hey, this is like an early April Fool's joke. But then some previews started coming out today, and so far every single one has been confirmed. So we can say with some pretty good confidence that we know what the next Nicol Bolas is going to do, and it's glorious.
Oh yeah.
Can I say it?
Oh, absolutely.
All right. So for those of you who haven't been on Reddit, they're the ones that picked this up. The card is called Nicol Bolas, Dragon God. It is a legendary Planeswalker Bolas. It's one of the three mythic Planeswalkers in the set. The other two are Gideon and Liliana, which we already knew about Liliana. So he costs one blue, three black, and one red. So that's 5 mana. He starts with 4 loyalty. The trope of the Planeswalkers in this set is that they all have static or activated abilities that they've never had before. Nicol Bolas' static ability is as follows. Nicol Bolas, Dragon God, has all loyalty abilities of all other Planeswalkers on the battlefield. Yeah, I didn't stutter on that one. He does.
Actually, you kind of did. Hold on. I'm going to have to repeat it. No, you actually did stutter because like the thing went down.
Nicol Bolas, Dragon God, has all loyalty abilities of all other Planeswalkers on the battlefield. So, yeah, that's just his static ability. So his plus one is you draw a card. Each opponent exiles a card from their hand or a permanent they control. So if they don't have any cards in their hand, they're nuking a permanent, but they have the choice if they have both. -3, destroy target creature or planeswalker. Pretty standard for Nicol Bolas. He likes to blow stuff up. And then his ultimate, -8. Each opponent that doesn't control a legendary creature or planeswalker loses the game.
Which, that's huge.
He just flat kills you.
Yes. So that's big.
That is big, and the brewers on Reddit have already found an infinite combo with him. So,
I believe it.
Yeah, I'll let you guys go on Reddit, go find it. It probably would never see play in a tournament, but you know, in casual or EDH or whatever, yeah, it's ridiculous. It's standard legal, by the way. The combo is standard legal.
Yeah, and I don't think we're going to see. I really don't think we're going to see. Yeah, he's going to see play in like limited. I don't see how he plays in tournament. I just, you can't. It's like.
Well, I mean, he's Grixis. I mean, there's the fixing is there. I would obviously be heavily into black. So you could do like 5 color black with the chromatic lanterns. He would slot into there. I don't know. I mean, his effect is powerful enough, although it's one of those things where you see that and then you remember, oh yeah, there's 37 planeswalkers in this set, so odds are they're going to have a planeswalker in play or a legendary creature, so his ultimate might not be as relevant. But power level alone, he's up there. He's a typical Nicol Bolas planeswalker. He's ridiculous.
Yeah, and you're not wrong. it's interesting. I don't know what the metagame is going to do with this. Like, you look at some of these, and I mean, the planeswalkers that we've gotten so far, really, they've given us are like things like, you know what? I got to go to MTVG Salvation up top. I can't put them on the screen. It actually starts like breaking.
That's
so
fine.
My laptop can't handle
that's
it.
That's fine.
Is
so, yeah,
our host
we've
machine,
had,
just go to MTG Salvation. You can see these.
Yeah.
Yeah, my whole internet's acting weird.
They've released at least a dozen or so of the Planeswalkers, if not more, closer to 20.
Did you say something, Aramis?
Because I see Karn, I see Gideon, Teo. There's a bunch. The new Jace is out there. There's a new Teferi, which is stupid.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, hold on a second here. Mm-hmm. All right, there we go. So, I mean, I'm looking at this. The new Karn is pretty dumb. Gideon, you know, that's kind of a standard Gideon. I was kind of like, okay, yep.
Yeah, but you don't have to use any loyalty for that to happen, though.
True.
This just happens now. He's just a 4/4 indestructible.
Yeah.
During your turn.
Let's see. The Wanderer is interesting.
Yeah.
So, the Wanderer is a it's a 3 and a white. And it says it's a legendary planeswalker, prevent all non-combat damage that would be dealt to you and other permanents you control. So while it's out there, nobody can burn you. Mm. It's an anti-burn card.
Yes.
That will see play. I guarantee that will see play.
Well, there's an interesting little feature about the Wanderer. What is that, Benson?
Oh, -2 exile target creature with power 4 or greater?
No. What planeswalker type is it?
It's a uncommon.
No, not that. They're, you know, like, you know how you say legendary planeswalker Gideon, legendary planeswalker Bolas. What's the?
It has no anything.
Yeah, we don't know who this is, and they didn't tell us who this is.
Right. So this is interesting. You know, some what you were saying, it might be.
There's some speculation. Some people on Reddit put on their tinfoil hats, and they're saying that this is actually Emrakul.
Really?
Which I think is kind of interesting because apparently...
I don't know that I can go with that. Seeing that she looks kind of female, I kind of wonder if it's not Liliana.
Well,
like after she turns good, like she survives and turns good.
Well, Emrakul,
you know, because she becomes white.
Yeah, but Emrakul is female in that respect, I guess. And
right.
Apparently in the story, when she gets locked up in the moon on Innistrad, yeah. She sort of does it by choice. And I guess she has the ability to sort of project herself in other planes. And I guess some people are saying the pose that she has, the way she's carrying her sword, looks a lot like the artwork on the I think it was like Temple of Forgotten Gods or whatever from one of the sets for the in Zendikar.
Yeah, that would be. Yeah, that was Return to Zendikar.
Yeah, so
or Battle for Zendikar.
They say it looks a lot like Amara did on that statue.
All right, I can go with that.
So they're saying, you know, they wouldn't be surprised if it was Emrakul, because Emrakul, the Eldrazi, I guess, don't like planeswalkers either.
No, they don't. So, but I mean, she's good. She's white. Like, yeah. it's a very hard.
And
yeah.
Like you said,
and she's
uncommon.
Protecting you.
She's protecting you. She's uncommon. I mean, I like, in that regard, I like Teo, the shield mage. He's another uncommon. 2 and a white for 5 loyalty. You have hexproof. And you minus and I mean, his -2 ability is kind of eh. You create a 0/3 white wall creature with defender, but still you have hexproof for 3 mana.
Well, I mean, and then you start thinking about it, and a lot of these planeswalkers don't have pluses on them. It's very strange. But so, you know, you may ask yourself and say, you know, how did I get here? Letting the days go. Oh wait, wrong song.
Yeah.
You may ask yourself, where is my beautiful house? Oh, wait, no.
Still
but you might be asking, yeah, I know. You might be asking, like, how the heck do these power up then? And you have played against me in Commander. You have played against me in EDH.
Yeah.
That there is a mechanic that is very near and dear to my heart that I love more than most mechanics. And seeing that it's returning for this set, I couldn't be happier.
Was it banding?
And
with
it's
other...
how you're going to be able to put
Was it banding with other legends?
No. But they have brought back Proliferate.
Ugh.
And I love it because I play Atraxa and I love Proliferate. It's like I just look at this set and go, okay, a lot of this could go right in my commander deck. Mm-hmm. Woohoo!
Yeah.
But if you don't know what proliferate is, proliferate basically says if something has a 1/1 count, you know, put another 1/1 count, +1/+1 counter, or +1/+1, put another counter of whatever type is on creature, planeswalker, or player you control.
They actually tweaked the ability. They actually changed it. Yeah. So proliferate, it used to be if a permanent had multiple types of counters, you had to pick one. Now it's choose any number of permanents and or players, then give each another counter of each kind already there. So So if something had a +1/+1 counter and a charge counter, now it's getting one of each. Or if you had an energy,
or both.
Yeah, or if you had an energy counter and a poison counter, you get one of each. So, they tweaked the rules for proliferate. I don't know if they made it like better / worse. It's definitely more powerful now.
Right. It's good, and I'm on board. Mm-hmm. I really am. I am 100% on board. You know, I dig proliferate. I think it's a great mechanic. I know that it pissed some people off back because it was really used by the Phyrexians with poison counters.
Yeah. So, in fact.
Yeah. But, you know, here I don't see poison counters anymore. So, I mean, I can only think good things of this. Well, you know, I mean, there's a part of me that wishes the Soulscar Mage was still around, though, believe me. Mm. Oh, wouldn't that be something that they reveal another Soulscar Mage, like an eternalized Soulscar Mage?
Well, that's actually another little rumor that that some people are floating around. There was a picture at PAX that showed Nicol Bolas at his Citadel, which is another card they spoiled. And standing next to him on either side were four figures. You really couldn't make them out that well. But somebody caught on and said, wait a minute, these look like the gods from Amonkhet. Like, you know, like Kefnet and Ronus and Bantu. They think that they've been eternalized and that they'll probably show up in this set. How crazy would be an eternalized Oketra?
Oh, yeah. I'm with you. So, I'm thinking the same thing. I'm thinking that that's, you know.
But I'll say this. One deck that I know has already gotten a bunch of toys that's already standard, Esper Control.
Oh, yeah.
Because there is a new Teferi. And if you...
Oh, he's ridiculous.
If you hated Teferi before, you're not going to like his little brother.
Yeah, this guy is just... each opponent can only cast spells anytime they could cast a sorcery, but by instance.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but just for your opponent, not for you. You're fine.
Yeah, yeah. Until your next turn, you may cast sorcery spells as though they had flash.
That's just +1.
And at -3, it's returned up to one target artifact, creature, or enchantment to its owner's hand and draw a card.
Mm-hmm. And how much mana does this lovely Teferi cost?
Oh, he's very, very expensive at one colorless and a white and a blue.
Yep, 3 mana. 4 starting loyalty.
You son of a bitch.
Yeah. So
that's all I can say is you son of a bitch.
This is another card, another Teferi, where if you untap with him, you win the game. Because, yeah. Especially with another card that came out that you know, if you hold it to 5
wrong.
Mana, if you wait till turn 5 to play this, you've got Dovin's Veto to save him. Dovin's Veto is an instant for a white and a blue. This spell can't be countered. Counter target non-creature spell. It's an uncounterable negate. So you have protection for your Teferi.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, they can only play spells as sorceries, so there's none of that flashing in a mystic shenanigan, because since you can only play spells anytime you could cast a sorcery, it has to be during your main phase when the stack is empty, which means you cannot even respond to anything.
Yeah. It's looking like he's going to be busted. Mm-hmm.
And
there's no way.
If you even want to get away from Esper, you could go with Zorius, because now you have a new Wrath to play with called Time Wipe. Sorcery for 2/2 white and a blue. Return a creature you control to its owner's hand, then destroy all creatures.
Yep. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing.
This is disgusting. I mean, this set is crazy.
Well, even Lily. I mean, think about it. Whenever a creature you control dies, draw a card. That's a standard Lily thing. Mm. Create a 2/2 black zombie creature token, standard Lily. Each player sacrifices two creatures. Okay, that's a little...
Barter?
But her nine...
Well, that's barter and blood and a stick.
Yeah. And each opponent chooses a permanent they control of each permanent type and sacrifices the rest. Mm-hmm. Not you, your opponents.
Yeah. Pick your favorite one of everything and everything else dies.
Yeah. You know, and I mean, Chandra's back and she's okay. She's not, you know... I kind of like the whenever one or more loyalty counters are removed from her, she deals that much damage to target opponent or planeswalker. Mm-hmm. That's kind of nice. Exile the top card of your library. You may play it this turn. That's a standard Chandra. And her ultimate is exile the 7 cards of your library, and you may play them this turn.
Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, you would need to have the mana.
Yeah, you in a lot of it.
See, what's another one that they did that I thought was really crazy? Nissa, who shakes the world. So Nissa's back, and she's not happy.
No, she's a little pissed off.
Yeah, so she's 3/2 green.
Whenever you tap a forest for mana, add an additional green.
Yep, and she starts with 5 loyalty.
And go on.
Her +1 is you put 3 +1/+1 counters on target non-creature land you control. You untap that land, it becomes a 0/0 green elemental creature with vigilance and haste. That's still a land. So you could still tap that thing for mana afterwards. Ultimate is -8. You get an emblem, which we're hoping that there's a way to deal with emblems in this set. But if not, you get an emblem with lands you control are indestructible. Search your library for any number of forest cards. Put them onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle your library.
You got to wonder if they're going to... I mean, we've talked about this. Okay. Looking at this set, they've got to come up with some way to deal with emblems.
Yeah. Well, with the one thing I'll say with the Nissa, I've got two words for you. Wilderness Reclamation.
Oh, yeah. There are a few things where you can kind of see it.
Band Control.
Wilderness Reclamation. Yeah. Wilderness Reclamation and Emergent Zone.
Mm-hmm.
Sacrifice Emergent Zone. You may cast spells this turn as though they had flash. Oh, okay. So on my end step, I will untap 3 red, I'll have 3 red floating, tap the 3 red floating, untap everything, tap 3 more blue, still have other creature mana to play, and play Niv-Mizzet on my end step, and then let me throw some instants at your face.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then...
like,
and
it
then...
just... Go on.
Along those same lines with Wilderness Reclamation, Karn's Bastion. It's a rare land. Tapped for a colorless. You tap 4 and then tap that to proliferate. I can see this in your Atraxa deck pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah. I'm with that. It's just looking... This whole thing is just... It's a great deck.
They said they went a little crazy with this set. I completely believe them.
Vivian is even freaking stupid. You can cast creature spells as though they had flash. Until your next turn, her +1 is until your next turn, up to 1 target creature gains vigilance and reach. Her -2 is look at the top 3 cards of your library, exile 1 face down, put the rest in the bottom of your library in any order. For as long as it remains exiled, you may look at the card and you may cast it as if it is a creature card. So you have to put a creature card down. But it's just... my God. By the way,
don't forget, they made a little more crazy version of Experimental Frenzy.
Oh, yeah.
Bolas's Citadel. It's a legendary artifact, 3/3 black. You may look at the top card of your library at any time. You may play the top card of your library. If you cast a spell this way, pay life equal to its converted mana cost rather than its mana cost. And then tap, sacrifice 10 non-land permanents. Each opponent loses 10 life. That last line of text is not super relevant because at that point you've played your deck pretty much.
Yes.
Especially if you think about this.
So it's...
you play this in conjunction with cards that gain you life. You know, you flip over or revitalize. You lose 2. You gain 3. You draw a card. You can still flip over. You just gave yourself 3 mana.
Yeah, exactly.
It's crazy. I mean, there's a new Bitter Blossom type card in the set. I mean, there's a new almost like a Wrath of God effect that's an exiling effect called Ravnica at War. It exiles all multicolored permanents. I mean, that's crazy. It's just they really
they've found hit it.
Yeah, all the bag of tricks they've been saving up for the last few years, these sort of just puked them all out at once.
Well, they've even brought in Oncrop Invader. Mm. You know, I mean, just the sheer power in this whole set. You know, and I mean, they brought a Johnny's Pride mate back, which we were wondering when they would. We knew that it wasn't going to go away.
Mm. Perfect spot to bring it back.
It really is. You know, I like how they put the Planeswalker and then, you know, at least for the rare ones have help. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a Vivian's Arc Bow. For Chandra, they haven't shown it yet. Liliana has a Liliana's Triumph. You know, there's help. Gideon has a Gideon.
Every Planeswalker in the set has a card that references them. So even Tybalt has a helper card.
Which, you know, makes Tybalt actually... No, he's still not usable.
He's actually, I mean, it's not terrible. I mean, it's a good sideboard card against, like, maybe a white deck of some kind. I mean, Tybalt, Rakish Instigator, 5 loyalty for 2 and a red, uncommon. Your opponents can't gain life. That's always a powerful effect.
That's, you're not wrong.
So, I mean, even his -2, I mean, it's not super relevant. Create a 1/1 devil token with when this creature dies, it deals 1 damage to any target. Okay, that's whatever. But you can keep him around, at least if you're playing against a deck that has a bunch of life gain, you shut that off.
True. I can't. It's amazing.
And we don't even know what, like, 2/3 of the set is. This is only the first day of previews.
You know, and even the buy a box promo, Tezzeret, is useful. Mm-hmm. Like, Tezzeret and Emergence, or no, what was it? Tezzeret and, no, it might have been Emergence Zone. Well, Tezzeret alone is going to make Treasure Map, you know, useful.
Yeah.
It's just the sheer power, the sheer, I keep saying it, but I don't know what else to say. And I mean, we are, we haven't even done combat yet.
Yeah. This set's going to be bonkers. We cannot wait for this.
Yeah. So, I mean, I will definitely be a pre-release. So, but let's go into combat real quick. I do want to talk about, you know, some stuff that happened this weekend. We may or may not do a second main, but let's get into combat here.
Okay.
Combat phase.
All right. Combat phase. I'm going to take the lead on this one. Okay. So we've had our first Mythic Invitational played on Arena. So the question is, do you, Mr. Perez, prefer now, after watching this, do you think it's better to watch coverage with paper, where we really can't see the hands and all that stuff? Or would you rather see more arena coverage where we got to see the hands and you know, that sort of stuff?
You know, based on what I've seen, based on the amount of information that you get, I think as much as I love paper, I think arena is probably better. I think it's better. If for no other reason, then you get to. It's a little more entertaining in the sense that, you know, the animations and the sound effects, it sort of adds another level to the game. You do miss the talking back and forth that you get from the players, and the interface on Arena right now allows none of that unless you're spamming emotes, which is just really trolling.
Right.
But, you know.
But I saw headsets on these guys. I wonder if they could talk to each other.
I don't know. I mean, it seemed like at some points that they were, but we didn't hear what they were saying if they were talking to each other.
No, I know.
So I don't know if that was a capability that they had, or if they were just talking to a producer that was talking in their ear saying, how's your computer running? Is everything going okay? We have no idea what was going on with that. I do like how they had the camera sort of panning back and forth between the two players, so you could sort of see each of their
board
states.
Yeah, that was good.
Being able to always see what's in both players' hands, I think, is fantastic, because it really lends... Because, you know, in paper covers, they do that too, but sometimes they're a little slow on the update. And just seeing the name next to, you know, a little sideboard of what the card is, isn't quite the same thing as seeing the picture, I guess. They still had overlays. I didn't get a chance to really use them too much, but I think the overlays basically just showed the deck list. So I don't know if it was the type of thing where you could hover over the card and it would show you what card it was. But overall, I think the presentation was really well done. I think any future arena tournaments that they have will be big, big successes. I just hope it's not the death knell of Paper Magic coverage. And with that, I say go.
Well, I don't know. For me, I mean, I am a purist. And I, here's the thing. I watch poker, like, a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, I actually like to watch poker, like, on TV. You know, World Series of Poker and all that stuff. So, sometimes I wonder why they can't do that. Now, maybe it's because at a GP or even a Pro Tour, you know, there's too much chance of somebody, you know, having a Bluetooth in their ear saying, okay, he's got this, he's got this, he's got, you know, his buddy standing over the corner.
Right.
Or just watching the stream. Mm-hmm. But would that be, yeah, pardon, that was pop. With that being said, I mean, if they had the ability to show the hands, and they had the ability so that, you know, they could prepare too, because they can't see the hands. It's not, you know, so it takes them a few seconds to get a card up, because until it's out on the battlefield, they can't, they don't know it's there. Like, so be, you know, having a little camera on the table where they can kind of see what's coming, mm-hmm. and be prepared for it. I'd love to see that, because I do like the interaction between them, you know, where somebody's like, you're going to Kaius Wrath me now, aren't you? Oh shit. Mm-hmm. You know, and you don't get that in the arena. If they turned on the microphones that they were wearing and put them through a feed so we could hear them, you know, I'd be cool with that. Did I break?
You kind of froze for a second.
Yeah, I heard it. It's actually weird. I heard it on my laptop here. If, you know, if they could hear the microphones, like if we could hear the microphones and they could hear each other, that would make it more interesting to me. It would seem more personable. It did seem a little too sanitary for my life.
Yeah. You know what? I'll agree with that. I think the one thing that it's really missing is the interaction and the poker aspect of bluffing. Because there's really no bluffing in arena, because it automatically passes priority. Even if you set all the stops, it keeps passing priority automatically if you have no response. You know what I mean? And the second they cast something and all of a sudden it stops, you're like, all right, they have something, probably a counterspell. Yeah. How do I play around it? I mean, obviously at that point it's too late because now you know they have it. I don't know. It's just overall, I think the presentation is better. I think it's good for the game. But it does, you do lose that personal aspect of the game. You do lose the ability to read what your opponent is doing just based on their body language or the way their eyes are moving.
Right. Well, and I think you lose the ability to miss triggers. Like, that's a part of the game.
Yeah.
You know, like, he missed a trigger. Uh-oh. You know, how often does that happen? The commentator's like, oh, dear.
Although the one thing that's good about it is that, because what ends up happening a lot of times when you miss the trigger, it turns into a judge call. The judge takes 5 to 10 minutes to get there. It takes another 5 to 10 minutes to figure out what's going on. Are they going to assess a penalty or not? Okay, now we can go on to untapping your land, which is what we were doing in the first place.
Right.
Whereas in arena, it's just, oh, well, you can't miss the trigger because it's this huge pop-up on your screen. So the only thing you can do is misclick, which that can also happen. So I guess
that did happen.
Yeah. So instead
at
of
at least
a,
once or twice.
Yeah. So instead of missing triggers, you misclick.
Yeah. It's a very, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I think. I don't think Paper Magic can go away. I think without Paper Magic, you lose arena.
Yes, absolutely.
I don't think this has the Hearthstone level of keeping it. Mm-hmm. You know, it needs it. So I don't think they'll ever get rid of paper, but yeah, I can tell. I'm a little
yeah, you're chopping
jagged
up again.
Yeah.
I'm having all kinds of audio
issues
today.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if it's me. We're getting a new router. So, you know what? With that, it's at 54 minutes. We could skip second main altogether. And let's just, by the way, I'm going to say that you won this one. Arena might be better.
Well.
All right. Let's go to End Step.
Okay.
End Step.
All right, End Step. All right, welcome to End Step. Woo. What a show. We managed to get our way through it. okay, so we are on the internets all over the place now. First of all, like, moving to Anchor has been great. We've been seeing a lot better you know, information as far as how many people are downloading. So please keep sharing this show out, downloading it. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Chrome. I don't know if we're on Amazon yet, but I'll check. Spotify, anywhere you can find a podcast, we should be there. But you can also reach out with us and interact with us on Twitch. Our Twitch is Planestalkers Podcast. You can reach us on Twitter at Planestalker Pod. You can reach us on Facebook at facebook.com/Planestalker. You can find me personally. My personal Twitter is at WR Benson, and my personal Twitch is MindCrime73. And finally, you can email us, and we really would love to have you email us so that you can ask questions. Because, I mean, we're going to make a, you know, maybe a second little mini cast that we put up every once in a while called Ask Aramis, where you can send Mr. Perez your questions and he'll answer them for you, and he can record it even on the fly. I don't even need to be here. and you can email us at podcast@planestalkerspodcast.com, and in the subject just say Ask Aramis. And Aramis, where can people find you should you wish to be found?
Well, I don't have Twitter, so I'll probably only be maybe checking or responding to the main Planestalker Twitter page. But I am on Twitch. I haven't been streaming very often lately. I'm hoping to get back into doing that pretty soon. But when I do stream, I am at ArmekWRX. That's ArmekWRX. I usually try to stream when I do go on. It's on Wednesday nights, maybe Friday nights if there's no FNM, which I will be at this week.
Yay!
And then
playing
probably Esper Control. I went 4-0. Come on, 2 weeks ago. I guess you have to.
I don't know. Do I go with Mono Red or do I go with Gruul? I mean, I'm not sure which one I'm going to roll with yet.
You go with Esper Control and you join the dark side.
Yeah, but there's already three of you there, man. It's just going to be another Mono Blue where we're all just going to be sitting there beating up on each other and going to time every round.
Misery loves sharing misery with company.
So I don't know. I might play Mono Red just to be like, bam, 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 hopefully. So who knows? But we will be there Friday night. So Kerwin's Games, if you guys are in the Capital Region of New York, which is Albany for anyone else who's not in Capital Region of New York. But we'll be down in Catskill. So, you know, you can feel free to pop in and say hello. We will be back here next Monday talking about who knows what. I mean, we're going to have a lot more spoilers. So, I mean, this podcast is probably going to go wall to wall War of the Spark for the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Unless something else big drops.
Unless something else big drops. And, you know, and don't forget, we're the podcast made by casuals for casuals. So if there's anything you want to see here, please let us know. We'd love to hear from you. But for that, we're just going to back us on out. So for Aramis Perez, my name is Will Benson. Thank you all for tuning in tonight. And we hope that all your lands remain untapped. Have a great week, and we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.